by facts and driven by truth. Broadcasting live from beautiful British Columbia, it's Roadkill Radio. And now, here are your hosts, Terry Simpson and Terry O'Neill.
Yes.
Hi, Terry.
Hi, Terry. You're looking just too good, I think.
Well, you know, my little glow I have from some southern sunshine is starting to approach your perpetual glow, because you always have a lovely glow about
you. But wait, southern sunshine. I think you better give some explanation.
Oh, well, no, just a little spring break vacation where the entire Coquitlam School District seemed to go down to either California, Mexico, or Hawaii, and my wife's part of that district, and they had 2 weeks this year because the school district is attempting to save money. They've added about 10 minutes extra per day to the school day, and that allows them to take an extra week off at spring break, a week during which they don't have to heat the schools as much, don't have to pay replacement teachers and all sorts of stuff, and they save money that way, and it's a nice break. So we took advantage of it. So I missed last week's show. I understand it was fantastic, really powerful. And hopefully this week will be as much as important and maybe even a little fun, too.
Well, you think us? Do it? Have fun? Yeah, maybe, I don't know, maybe, Terry. Maybe not.
You know, I was away on vacation, just got back this weekend, but I went right to work right away on behalf of Roadkill Radio.
I would hope so.
One of the things I did right away when I got back was I gave a phone message to David Golub, the director of the communications branch of the Canadian Human Rights Commission, because they didn't answer my email from 2 weeks ago.
Wait a minute. The Canadian Human Rights?
Yeah. The one, that commission
that
I... They're
ignoring you, Terry.
I'm on their blacklist. How can they ignore me?
You should have a priority
status. I know, exactly. Oh, here's a blacklist member.
Did you make note of that in your email to them?
You know what? I didn't. I should have had you as
Terry,
my guide there.
Come on.
That's right. So, you know, I wanted to know this complaint that was filed by Jens Holquist and some homosexual rights activists a couple of years ago regarding their claim that they are being discriminated against by Canada Health because there are not special programs in place to deal with all the homosexual-related mental and physical illnesses.
And they admittedly they have more of these.
Yeah, and, you know, like, if I were to say that and get that printed, I might be hauled up before a Human Rights Commission for drawing undue negative attention to
these
particular groups.
Automatic, guaranteed prerequisite.
Right. But anyway, I found that very interesting, and I really want to know how this is progressing. And I think it's still alive. There was an update from about 7 or 8 months ago where there was some appeal of something. But I'd like to know the progress of this. So I've now sent them an email. I've also emailed a voice message today. And so I'll stay on top of that for Roadkill Radio here. So that was one of the things I did today. And the other thing, Carrie, I can't believe this. I mean, I think...
We live in British Columbia. We live in Canada. Anything's possible, Terry.
We think we're through. You know, I've been having therapy on air here for a couple of months regarding the animal rights juggernaut.
He actually had it written into his contract,
that's right.
People.
You have to give me a moment.
It's either here or a professional.
That's right. So, well, you're a professional.
Well, I'm getting really good at it, aren't I?
You are, too. And so I came back and found out that the province of British Columbia is announcing Canada's toughest animal cruelty laws. Well, fine, as far as that goes. That's all in response to the slaughter of
sled dogs,
dozens or hundreds of them, sled dogs at Whistler last year. But part of that got my attention was that they'd given the BC SPCA a $100,000 grant to enhance their capacity for animal cruelty investigations. Now, of course, your first response when you heard this was that the BC SPCA, aren't they the group that
kills the dogs
kills
and
the
cats.
Dogs. I know.
You want your dog done in? Yes,
right.
Send them to the SPCA.
So that was kind of funny. But I had another thought, and I said, well, what exactly does the BCSPCA stand for? So I looked at their mission statement. You know, you got to do some digging, and you're great at this, and you've inspired me to kind of go and dig in to see
you just never know what you're going to find, and usually find something really good.
Something. Well, their mission statement is to protect and enhance the quality of life for domestic, farm, and wild animals. So,
wait.
What?
Domestic,
farm
and
wild animals in British Columbia. So their mission is to enhance the quality of life for wild animals, okay, in British Columbia. That's part of it. So keep that thought right there. And another part of their website, they talk about the issue of feral rabbits, you know, pet bunnies that are released. And that's been a big issue at the University of Victoria.
The cute rats that run around.
Yeah, the cute rats, anyway. So they're saying, oh, something has to be done better than just culling these. Sadly, these rabbits face considerable hardships once abandoned. They are vulnerable to predation by other wildlife. Brackets. Hardly a humane death. No, I said, wait a minute.
Okay.
You're considering.
Okay. I'm trying. Just let me compose myself for a minute before. Okay.
Connect the dots here, right?
Oh, my dots are connected.
Okay. You're sputtering.
A humane death.
A humane death. So essentially what they are saying is that when one animal in the wild preys on another, that is an inhumane death. One has to believe then that given them, remember that mission statement, that they want to protect and enhance the quality of life of wild animals, that they are against any predation of a wild animal on another wild animal, because they consider that an inhumane death.
Okay.
So they are against nature here, obviously.
Well, let me just give a few examples, and you tell me whether or not this is humane or not. I live on a farm. I mean, we have acres.
Oh, by definition, inhumane.
There are coyotes that eat my chickens.
Inhumane.
There are rabbits who eat my garden. Is that? Oh, I'm helping the quality of wildlife there.
I don't know. You know, you gotta yogurt has feelings. Doesn't carrot have feelings too? It's a living being.
You know, I would imagine.
Yeah, I know.
But wait a minute. What the one traumatic event that happens quite often when I'm out walking my fields is the eagle swoop down and capture field mice and rats.
That is inhumane.
About my barn cats keep my barn free of rats?
If a coyote preying on a rabbit is an inhumane death, then all animals preying on other animals is inhumane, and that's something that goes against what the SPCA stands for, because they are to protect and enhance the quality of life for wild animals, and they've said here that an animal preying on another animal is inhumane. Therefore, that's not part of the quality of life. So they are out to change the world, I'll tell you. The BCSPCA.
Okay,
so this is the group. Bottom line here is the bottom line.
$100,000.
We've given $100,000 to these nitwits. Nitwits is a good word.
I can think of a better
one. We can think of stronger words, but that's the word. So that's the nitwit.
Well, who's the nitwit? The person who gave them the $100,000 or us, the taxpayers, that make the $100,000 available to give to the nitwits?
There's a nit over there giving to the wit over here. No, there are two nits. We're the wits.
Yeah. So we better wit the nits out of here.
Yes, anyway, we got a great show tonight. We better get on with it because I'm through with my therapy for the time being.
Well, no, you know what? I just have one thing I need to clarify in my mind, because this is an event that just happened yesterday.
Yes, I know.
The quality.
How was I so quick off the mark?
To know that.
Yes.
Well, the quality of wildlife on my farm has it pretty good. I have a goose couple that comes every year and nests on one of the islands on my pond. I have another goose couple, a younger one, that come and nest in my swimming pool area.
Yes.
Now,
I've seen your swimming pool.
Right next to the swimming pool area is where my stallion hangs out, because there's chain link fencing, and stallions are inclined wildly to, you know, they don't need dress codes to inspire them, put it that way. But yesterday morning I went to feed my stallion, and the goose is now sitting on her nest, and the gander, who protects his women. I mean, you know, if you want to learn how family should operate, you should just observe a goose family, attacked in his paddock my stallion. Now, shouldn't this goose have remained in his territory? Like, at what point does his quality of life, the pool area is pretty nice, you know, how should he know, and who would be right here? I mean, if you have this goose beating on my stallion.
You know what? This is an important question.
I think
we should apply to the British Columbia government for a $100,000 grant so we can study this.
I'm with you. There we go. Everybody can join us in this.
Yeah. And before we leave the subject, we do have a quick letter that's just come in, email come in from Jane saying, help. What does humane have to do with animals? Hello? Thank you, Jane. Right. Yeah, well.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, thanks, Jane. And yes, throughout the show, you're welcome to send in emails. Please do so with your comments, questions, queries to roadkillradio@live.ca. We do have a jam-packed full show. Later in the evening, we'll be talking with John Twigg about matters political here in British Columbia. Before that, we'll be talking about the Bain family, an update with their struggles with the BC Human
Ministry of Destruction.
Ministry of Families and whatever.
And children.
And I might have a little editorial somewhere in there as well. But first, we are going to talk with one of my favorite bloggers.
We need to hold on for this.
That's
one,
right.
Terry O'Neill.
Yes, okay. the woman who I think her name of her blog is describes a sort of it's gotten right up there with Roadkill Radio, and that's 5 Feet of Fury. We welcome to the show Kathy Schadl. Hello, Kathy. Are you there?
Hi, I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Kathy.
Yes, we're just turning up the microphone here so I can hear you. And sorry, I'm turning up that loudspeaker. Kathy, you always write very perceptively about matters, political, social, legal, even demographic sometimes. Something has really got our attention here, and Carrie and I were on the same wavelength. We're going to use a word, ladies and gentlemen, that you don't hear very often on the, you hear very little on the public airwaves. You'll hear more on Saturday Night Live or here on Tuesday Night Live. The word is slut, and there was an organization, a protest called the Slut Walk. That you commented upon, Kathy. Tell us,
yes.
What the heck is all this about?
Okay, well, what happened was a poor Toronto police officer told some students at York University during some kind of a seminar on how to be safe on campus that one way to avoid being raped would be to not, quote, dress like sluts, end quote. And this led to a group of students deciding to put on what they called the Slut Walk over the weekend, in which they decided that they would, and I think they had at least 1,000 people, men and women. Some of the women dressed provocatively, and they sort of walked up and down the streets of downtown Toronto to say, basically, we should be able to dress however we want. And while intellectually that sounds like a wonderful idea, in real life, on planet Earth, away from radical feminist theory, and I've been hearing this since I was in college in the 80s, that women should be able to dress whichever way they like, that's really not the way that people are made, and it's not the way that the world is set up. So I had some fun with that, and I ended up writing a blog post called Why Slut Walk is Worse Than Burning the Koran.
Yes.
It managed to get a lot of attention, and Mark Stein, who's a very nice guy, linked to it, and that sort of led to it getting picked up by a lot of people. And it was just my thoughts about men and women and the differences between them, which I know we're all supposed to pretend don't exist, etc. And why, it's the extremist view. The people who've been arguing with me have been saying, but women don't get raped because of the way they're dressed. And I think that that's just taking it to the extreme, the way that we always say, well, not all Muslims are terrorists. There's something that we can talk about, and that is it really a good idea just for male-female harmony in general, rape or no rape, for women to dress in a certain way when we all know, or we're supposed to know, that men are simply biologically built to be aroused by the way women look and dress.
Yeah,
we can all take all kinds of sensitivity courses and do all kinds of things like that, but certain traits and behaviors are simply inborn, as anyone who has a little boy and a little girl will tell you. When they try to get the little girl to play with a truck, the girl wraps the truck in a blankie and gives it a name.
Yes, and when you try to get your sons to play with nonviolent toys, they will take the Lego and make rifles out of them.
And they will, if some little boys I've known, now not little boys any longer, chop the head off Cannon Barbie.
Yeah!
You know.
Aw, Terry. Being such a man.
Right. Now,
my favorite is using the Barbie doll as a gun. Like setting up the legs, bending the legs so that it's like a handle. That's really pretty
there's something,
much all
there's some,
you need to know. In one picture.
Yeah, there is some deep truth trying to assert itself here, and it's sort of one of my central tenets that the truth will always find a way to assert itself.
Or display itself.
You know what? And speaking of that, you know, you have this one lonely police officer talking about this, but he's not alone in Canada. I mean, there's another controversy out of Manitoba on a very similar theme.
Oh.
Justice Robert Dewar. He said this in a recent sex assault case.
Oh, yes, that's right.
You remember that? Yeah. So,
right.
He talked about, essentially, that in ruling about a sex assault case, he said, well, the way the woman was acting and dressing and all sorts of stuff, he said sex was in the air.
Right.
The way the woman was dressed and her actions the night she was forced to have sex in the woods, kind of led the guy to believe that something was going on here. And, of course, that has led to all sorts of denunciation from the same sort of people who would have had
And
it.
Rallies. The rallies erupted in Manitoba
You know, that's it's... Right. So what does all this tell you about where we are as a culture right now, Kathy?
Well, it depresses me to think that we can get a couple of thousand people to march around downtown Toronto for the right to dress like a prostitute, but when it's me and I'm facing off against 3,000 screaming Muslims yelling, you know, death to Jews on, you know, Bloor Street, as I was a few years ago, it's me and three old ladies and a couple of guys from the Jewish Defense League, you know, on the other side of the barricade. People have odd priorities.
Yeah. Fundamental priority. This new vision of the relationship between men and women. I mean, it's kind of a confused one, right? I mean, there's so many different stages of feminism. I can't think of a good metaphor for it right now, but it's you don't really know exactly, well, what sort of feminist are you, a type 1, a type 2, or a type 3?
Right.
And, this is obviously type 2 feminism. This is a type 2 feminism protest. We're not after essential, just equal equality rights in the workplace, but we want to actually revisit the definition of what it means to be a woman.
That would be a feminist 1A.
1A or something like that.
Yeah.
So you never quite know where they're getting, but it's clear that this has hit a nerve with a lot of people who have not only embraced this idea of what it means to be a woman, but also the other big part of it, of course, is the whole vulgar culture that's out there that's displayed not just about women, but men and women so evident in music videos and so many popular music and dance moves and things like that. It's very vulgar and sexual. Sort of vulgar is
it is absolutely and you know when we were talking about this before the show, Kathy, and I wonder if this police officer would have gotten in as much trouble as he did if he had said, look, you know, it's not about what you wear, it's about how you accessorize. You know, you can dress like a slut, just have a German shepherd beside you, you know, if you don't want to get raped. You know, would there have been rallies if he had said something like that?
Well, you could imagine if what he had said had been what I would have said, which is the best way to avoid anything like this is for us to allow concealed carry in Canada.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, Kathy, I agree with you because I have four children. Three of those kids happen to be three gorgeous daughters that, you know, just, you know, like hot tamale definitions of what gorgeous kids should look like,
right?
Yeah,
they take after their mother. That's right.
And, you know, they, you know, I was thinking about this because I always was very...
dogmatic about how they would present themselves, how they would dress. I mean, how they would be, you know, perceived as whether they were modest or slutty. And, you know, if things got a little high on the thigh or low on the tit, you know, their mom was the first one to tell them, and they usually didn't go out looking like that. But, you know, they were also fitness buffs, and Hannah, you know, insisted on jogging. Well, mom insisted on her, you know, accessorizing with the giant schnauzer, you know, and why? Because she couldn't carry a gun, even though she knew how to shoot one because she's a gold medalist air pistol shot, right?
Right, right.
But, you know, because of these laws, and you're right, that would have been the simple solution.
Yeah, it would have. And, I mean, you mentioned vulgarity in pop culture, and I should mention to your listeners who are not familiar with my blog that they will often find examples of vulgarity in popular culture on my blog, and not always disapproving. But
wait, Kathy, let me gasp.
I'm a big fan of trashy B movies. I'm a big fan of Roger Corman and people like Russ Meyer. But I think what the problem is that people are confused about fiction versus reality, and that, you know, what is up on the screen is supposed to be escapist and fun, and maybe slightly aspirational, but you aren't literally supposed to walk around dressed like that, acting like that. Driving like, you know, Steve McQueen in Bullet or something.
Right,
it's a movie. And it's something that's always interested me, and I explore it on the blog, and I don't always have conclusions. But I guess my problem with Slut Walk isn't even how women want to dress. It's that the theme of the protest seemed to be, we want to dress the way we want, and we want there to be zero consequences. We want men to pretend they don't actually notice what, you know, we're wearing. We want to be able to say, what are you looking at?
Well, and that's...
They want everything, and they don't want any of the responsibility, whereas we place huge burdens on men to control their sexuality in public, and women are not asked to either control that or control their emotions, which would be helpful also in public.
Well, given that, Kathy,
it seems unfair for people who are saying, well, we believe in equality. You're really, you know, you're trying to have everything on your side, and, you know, you're asking, frankly, too much of normal human males.
Okay,
really
on that point, Kathy, I think what you're saying is you boil this down. This is a massive power play then, because they're saying we want to, A, dress the way we want to dress, therefore sort of exert and show all this feminine power that we have because we're very sexy creatures, and we know that it agitates men. I don't think they're dressing for other women, or in one way maybe they are too, and I'll get to that in a minute. But they're dressing for men, but at the same time they want the power, they want society to exert the power that will tell those men, don't you dare react to the way those women are dressed unless the women actually make the move. So they want all the power. Is that
exactly?
Okay.
And it's just first of all, it just goes against human nature, thousands of years of human nature and just biology. And it's you know, I got into an argument online with a libertarian guy whose wife went to Slut Walk, and I, you know, tried to explain to him that his ideals, with a capital I, about how all these things should be, are just as utopian and foolish as the socialist ideas he and I mock on a daily basis.
Right.
That is, that because we have declared this new ideal that, quote, women should be able to dress the way they want, that magically, if we all just march up and down the street a few more times, this will all take place. And, you know, to paraphrase what you said earlier, that's an ancient Roman saying that, you know, you can toss nature out with a pitchfork, but nature will make its way back. And we can march all we want, and we can wear funny T-shirts that have cute slogans on them, but, you know, our genes and our biology and our brains aren't going to evolve fast enough to keep up with the latest feminist theory about how we're supposed to dress this week. It's just not possible.
Well, you know what gets me is the hypocrisy in this discussion. You know, women can go dress the way you want. You want to dress and strut down slut walk, but there are repercussions for that. You know, just, and here's one of the repercussions, Kathy, the men aside, the repercussions are women like you and me are talking about this thinking that these people are idiots.
Right.
You know, if and forget the sexual innuendos and provocation and all the rest of it. The issue here is for, the, you know, and we're entitled to our opinion. We're entitled to come up with the conclusions that we want to. This, you know, these kinds of things are the natural result. The hypocrisy of what has gone on here is absolutely ludicrous on a number of fronts, not just limited to whether or not you're going to excite Terry O'Neill or not, or agitate. Sorry, you don't get excited. You just get agitated.
Just
that was a cute
just
word.
Need therapy. That's fine.
Yeah. But, you know, that there's, you know, all of these things. And are we just willfully deluding ourselves? I mean, do these women suffer from delusions of you know, how life really isn't, you know, that they're creating this mockery of reality?
Well, I think a lot of it is delusional. It's, you know, too much time in women's studies classes.
Mm.
And perhaps not enough time, I don't know, reading Jane Austen or something like that. So that is difficult. And I think another thing that we don't talk about enough, and people are sort of starting to talk about a little bit, I've noticed, is that it also is simply, you know, a biological human nature fact that, you know, a woman is going to be at her most attractive for a certain very slender period of time. And the way that you can make yourself feel when you look your best and are walking around and you're 25 years old and you look great is a kind of power that women don't get to experience in many other fields of endeavor. And it's very difficult to ask women not to exert that power.
Because to strut their stuff.
Class, and it's very, you know, it's quite amazing. And so that's something that we might want to try to address, too, as a society.
Well,
you know, people say, why do girls dress like this? Well, there actually is a reason.
Yeah.
And they know what they're doing. They don't not know what they're doing.
Kathy, you're not supposed to tell our secrets.
And they are, and I alluded to this a little earlier. They are dressing. It's competitive as well among women. I'm sexier than you. My hooters are hotter than yours. Those sorts of things. There is some competitiveness there. But here's another theory.
Wait, I'm still on the hot hooters.
The hooters are hotter. You can. That's another quote. That's another thing just right off the top of my head. You can use that. My hooters are hotter.
That should be on a T-shirt.
That's right. My hooters are hotter than yours. One of the friends of our show here came up with a theory as well. And given that this is an expression of feminism and power over men, the slut walk, the theory is that the next phase of this is that when all these babes, these sluts, are reach the end of the line where they can't parade around anymore, they are going to, the pendulum will swing exactly the opposite way for them, that they will be the first people to put on a westernized version of a burqa or something.
Right.
For a feminist, from a feminist perspective, saying...
Yeah, well, Germaine Greer actually had already went through that stage.
Okay.
She, one of her books from about 15 or so years ago was, oh, yeah, all that stuff I said, you know, I shouldn't have really talked about all that before. Now I wish that we had all not been so sleazy. And it's kind of like, well, thanks for coming out.
You know,
we appreciate you selling millions of books to people and having them adopt you as a role model. And, you know, it's like Gloria Steinem finally getting married a few years ago.
Right.
Well, you know,
I guess
that
I was wrong.
Fun, but
let's get real.
Thanks, you know. And so I think that will happen. And frankly, I would prefer that to the... as my grandmother used to say, the mutton dressed as lamb cougar phenomenon now, where a lot of women really, really need to be told by someone that after about 30 fine, low-cut stuff.
Yeah, present company
not
accepted,
so good.
I'm sure.
Mini skirts after 35, no, bad idea. So, yeah, I think they're either going to just never give it up, or there will be a few people, and like Germaine Greer, they'll revisit that book of hers.
Yeah, like say, there's a couple other
we need to do.
Yeah, and from this when I heard about this theory about that the pendulum would swing for these women and they'll go right from the slut walk to a very voluminous cover-up of some sort and do it as a feminist statement. It reminded me of a very, very important, I think, theme that was in John Irving's book, The World According to Garp. You might remember that in that book, and that was very prescient, I think, very insightful in this way, not necessarily prescient because it hasn't come true yet, but insightful about the nature of radical feminism.
Yes.
In the book, there was a young woman who had been raped and that her tongue had been cut out or something.
That's
as
right.
Part of the rape. So in solidarity with that, an entire movement of speechless women arose. And I think some of them cut their tongues out and some initiates were just voluntarily remaining mute. But that's another way of exerting your power. You know, you're going to have to now make special attempts to communicate with me because I can't do this sort of thing. Anyway, this sort of reminds me of this sort of perverted feminism. And that's a good word, I think. It's perverted. Because I think the slut walk is definitely perverted feminism. The other thing that I want to share is something that came out of the Marshall McLuhan school of thought. He was very much into the media and how the media influences us. And this isn't the content as much as just the overwhelming electronicization, if that's the right word, of our culture, that we are so wired, it's almost as if we are becoming inhuman. We're, as a culture, as a people, humans are beginning to feel that we are not human. So when you see outbursts of this sort of vulgarity, it is, from a McLuhan-esque point of view, a manifestation of a desire by the human race to assert its humanness, to assert its animalness, that we are living creatures, that we are not robots who are just intellectual libertarians, let's say, or intellectual radical socialists, that we actually are humans. So in that way, you can start to understand it a little more, but that doesn't absolve us from the duty to make moral decisions on how to behave, but that sort of, I think, starts to explain part of the impetus towards this sort of a thing. So anyway, there's a whole bunch of thoughts. What do you think about that?
Well, you know,
Kathy, you weigh in.
Well, I think Kathy has opened the floodgates here with slut walk, because there's no other way.
That's the first time I've heard floodgates and slut walk in the same sentence. Very good.
A momentous occasion on another momentous occasion on Roadkill Radio. But you know what, Kathy? I think this discussion has to be expanded because for those of us, I've often said, I was a commercial pilot way back when, before there was affirmative action mentality, and, you know, we got the jobs because we knew how to fly the damn airplane, you know,
right.
And we knew how to get along with our coworkers and all those other things. We didn't, you know, I would have felt so belittled if I had to just be a quota in a number of a company kind of thing. And a recent article came to my attention that just... I I'm getting so tired of this mentality, if I dare use mentality, because that implies that there's some thought process attached to this. And often said that, you know, I think radical feminists are women who are so dense they don't understand how much power we have as women, you know.
Right.
And you know, I know my ability to influence. I know what I can do as a woman that gets people's attention and those kinds of things. And it's not always with my brain, you know. I can, you know, I know, shock, Terry.
We'll get that T-shirt for you.
Yeah. My hooters are hotter than yours. I don't think there'd be much contest there, Terry. But, you know, there was this article out of the Tai, which is kind of a lefty online publication here in BC, but full of good stuff. But they were talking about the woman of the year is out of a job, and it was provincial cuts finally catch up with the Cranbrook Women's Resource Center. And they go on with this big...
Finally, thank God.
Well, you know what? The irony to this, Kathy, is, and this is what... I just started laughing, but this is the opening paragraph. Through the doors of the modest house came women seeking legal aid, women who had been battered, women who were homeless and needing rides out of town where safe abortions could be had. And, you know, the first thought that came to my mind, well, if they hadn't killed all those taxpayers, maybe they'd still have some money.
Yeah, well, you can't explain that to them. I've had this conversation with people, and they their eyes glaze over. They think money, the government prints it. Like, you know, it's what did those women say outside the handout? Say, oh, it's Obama's money. It comes from Obama's stash. Like, people really don't understand what taxes are. If you're a poor person, taxes are what you get back, and if you're, you know, middle class or wealthy, taxes are what you pay. There's a huge divide as to how people perceive where this money comes from. It's sort of that's a subject for another day.
Well, yeah. No, it's a subject for today, because I have to tell you of an experience that happened just yesterday morning in the grocery store lineup, where 10 people behind me, and you know, I'll use a soapbox in a grocery store wherever I need to, just to find out where public opinion really is. And we got on the subject of the federal election liberal message about, you know, funding daycare, the family pack. Yeah, you pack your kids off and let somebody else pay for it, right?
Right.
You know,
yep.
And quite frankly, you know, I did my duty in this country. I brought 4 children into this world. Now those 4 children, you know, there's 7 grandkids, you know, amongst us, future taxpayers. And, you know, we started talking about this in the grocery store, and it ended up to be quite a conversation that was met with a round of applause. It was quite intriguing. But people are fed up with our tax dollars being used for all these programs. I mean, we don't want to fund daycare. You know, where do these ideas come from? Are these bubble brain politicians just so cocooned that they don't see how the rest of the world is living? And what do we do about it? And again, going back to your slut walk, you have given license, Kathy, this is probably the most dangerous weapon that you've equipped Canadians with, to be frank in their discussion, to tell it like it is. And I'm not sure that Canada is ready for that. I know the citizens are. I don't think the politicians are. But bravo for you.
Well, thank you. And, you know, I have to say, I don't even believe the politicians are the problem so much as the unionized job for life bureaucrats at any level. Stephen Harper can come and go, but people who have that mentality, who are so-called public servants, a lot of them are the people who really drive this sort of thing. And I was frightened to learn that, you know, getting a government job is considered, you know, one of the goals of a lot of young Canadians. And I thought, well, see, we are really doomed, because, you know, people want to have a safe and trouble-free life, and they want a giant pension at the end of the day, and they're not prepared to do anything that might take that away from them, you know. And I've given this speech many times, and it's just that we can all sit and complain, we can listen to your show, we can go to a talk by someone like Mark Stein, but unless people are prepared to lose their job or simply get yelled at around the Thanksgiving Day table for voicing an alternative viewpoint, we will be back here 5 years from now, and I'll be giving the same speech, and you guys will be putting on the same radio show. A lot of it is politicians, and a lot of it is bureaucrats, but a lot of it is Canadians and, you know, North Americans in general, who just want to keep on buying their lottery tickets.
Yeah.
And they want a happy life. And, yes, they have children, and they have dental bills, and they have college. You know what? People have risked more for, you know, and done things, you know, without the safety that we have in Canada to be able to voice our opinions. And I find it depressing that more people, it's always, you know, they're eager to complain about Stephen Harper or whoever, but when was the last time they said, no, I'm saying Merry Christmas, or as I heard someone talk about on the radio today, no, I refuse to take that sexual harassment seminar or that diversity seminar. I'm not a sexual harasser. I'm not taking it. I'm not like that, and you can fire me. And people will applaud that, but they won't do it themselves.
So one of the things that this gets back to, and I share your sense of frustration, but I'm a little more optimistic in that none of this sort of stuff can happen or can be sustained without a lot of funding. And we've already seen now a little bit of a, from the conservative government, the promise if they get the majority, they're going to, or they get back into power, they're going to cut off some of the automatic funding that's going to go to parties, okay? So that's a little step there. But I think if we can get some momentum in that area, then, okay, what's the next step then? Well, that's cutting off funding to some of the organizations that the governments seem to automatically fund. And the conservatives have taken a few very gentle steps there and made some missteps as well. But another huge thing, I think, would be to give Canadian citizens the right that workers and just about every other Western democracy have, that if they belong to a union, that their dues, if they protest, will not go towards supporting political causes.
Right.
They can opt out of that sort of stuff. And just about everybody else has that. Canada, it's so such a lockstep, unionized sort of situation. And look at where the left gets so much of its money from. Organized labor, not only in donations through organizations and individuals, but their personnel as well. The money that organized labor sends, not just to political organizations, but to activist groups, is astonishing. I just saw on the internet, I forget whose website it was, a list of who are the big donors in American politics.
Right, yes.
And was that your site or Kate's or
I think Kate McMillan had it up at Small Dead Animal.
Yeah, that's right. And you just looked at all the unions, all of their money going to supporting, you know, the Democratic, the left-wing party there. And their money goes towards more than just political parties. It also goes to a lot of activist groups as well. So somehow we've got to find a way of turning off that tap, or at least giving people the right to say, no, that money doesn't go there. So we're getting some letters, that emails coming in response to your presentation here, Kathy. And one of them comes from Angie in Manor, Texas, says, of you. She says, I want to have her babies. She rocks.
Angie, she
rocks.
Emails me all the time. Okay. She's a nice, nice lady.
Okay. Okay. A little suspect on the sexuality there, perhaps. But
that's right.
Okay. I want to have her babies. Who is it? Jane has sent us another note that says, the problem starts in academia. And, well, yeah, there's a lot of... when you trace the roots of where these ideas come from, they always seem to go back to academia. Well, where does where do academics get the ideas from? And that's
yeah,
the big
I know
mystery,
that's
you know
that's that's something
happen?
That since I was smart enough not to go to university, best decision I ever made. I can't speak on that with any authority. I think if they just sort of sit, part of it is the demand to constantly keep publishing and to get your PhD accepted, presumably it has to be some kind of original theory. And, you know, I think everybody's almost run out of things to say about the Great Gatsby or whatever. So if you want to make a splash, you have to come up with things like, and this is true, Abe Lincoln was secretly gay. I don't know if you heard that one.
No, I haven't heard that one yet.
That's very depressing. And
well, everybody's secretly gay, didn't
everybody's
you know?
Secretly gay.
Are you in touch with
I've
your male side?
Well, I've written about this too. The contradictions in, you know, you're born that way, but it's a lifestyle choice. Everyone is secretly gay, but gay people are very special and a tiny minority who need to be protected.
This is all very contradictory.
Yes, it's very contradictory, but you know, no one's allowed to point that out because they will get very, very angry when
Oh, that's okay. I've been spanked by the gays. They've stopped beating on me though because they.
So
I like it, you know.
So I think essentially what you're saying is you're. See, I really kind of try to model my life on these very short little sayings that that seem to have timeless appeal. And I think what you're saying here, the problem with academia is that idle hands are a devil's workshop.
That's very true. And you know, you have to come up with the latest theory. It has to be very unusual and bizarre, and you can make a name for yourself. And that's really the only way, from what I understand. And also, you have to conform with the latest identity politics, hyphenated craziness.
Yeah, the more hyphens, the better.
The more hyphens. Yeah.
Well,
no, better.
Isn't it just slash now for gender? Because you can have like 27 different genders, so it's heterosexual slash homosexual slash, you know, what you can't decide that day slash. You know, you just put the slash, no hyphens, you just slash it now.
The Jane Avis, who's written us several emails this evening, said, well, if we cut off funding for the academics, they will have less time to think about stupid stuff that costs a lot of money. Instead, they would work to be useful members of society. So there's another point of view.
But isn't that where the solution is, though? Because I know in preparation for next week's show, we're talking about the universities being used to basically obtain all the data collection for all of us, right? But so when we talk about, you know, the need and you know, the wonkiness of these intellectuals, but doesn't the buck come back to us, because we keep funding this, we keep sending our taxes. I mean, it's tax season. We're paying for this insanity.
Well, you know, one of the big projects I was involved with, the Western Standard magazine, and I actually did two versions of a second. It was the annual Nuttiest Professors.
I found my copy of that.
You did? Okay.
Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Do you have your copy?
Oh, yeah, certainly do. Annual Nuttiest Professors, and we did one year in there. I was just about to publish our second one, and when the Western Standard went out of business. But I'll be talking more about Nutty Professors in a few minutes, actually. But we don't look hard enough at what actually goes on in the classrooms, in the lecture halls, in the universities. You know, McLean's spends hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars a year studying universities to death and every metric they can think of, and putting out their special edition every year. But it doesn't tell you what's actually going on, what sort of great stuff or what sort of garbage that university is aligned to. Now, some
Are we getting any bang for our buck?
Well, some universities have a real kind of unofficial reputation as being kind of loony left. I mean, SFU used to be the radical U back in the 60s and early 70s. But, you know, what measures that? And my Nuttiest Professors special in the Western Standard attempted to try to scratch the surface of that. So,
I would go further than that and say that the big mistake that we make is sending our children to university at all. Half the people who are in college right now really have no business being there.
Mm-hmm.
And they should be learning a trade. You know, I know she's not listening to this. A cousin of mine, lovely girl, not a genius, battered her brains out to get a BA, because you're supposed to get one, and just almost had a nervous breakdown. Mm. And she should have really, you know, all she was a bank clerk. I mean, can't she be a bank clerk without having, you know, a BA in something? I seem to recall that was possible at one time.
But, you know,
and she would have been happier, and, you know, and there would have been no difference in her work performance, and a lot of people should be learning trades.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people should be starting their own businesses. And fewer of them should be going to college in the first place.
Well,
and
here's a solution. I got a real good solution to that. I think university education should be free, but that the budget shouldn't go up. So universities should get the same funding they get now. And that when you go to university, you know, you don't have to pay anything. So it's a real meritocracy. But the best and most deserving people get to go to university because there are just limited seats there. So this isn't—it's not open to everybody because universities should be a special place.
Well, I agree, Terry, but we've made university a make-work project, and what comes to my mind immediately, and of course this is on the daycare front, Kathy, is the early childhood education certificate. You know, before you could just, you know, if you needed daycare, you could be like, you know, my good friend who every day brought her daughter to my home, where I would take care of her and take her to school with my kids and bring her home after school and feed her.
all those kinds of things, you know, because that's what we do, and not charge anything. Now,
right.
I know that just would shock people to think that people actually help each other without contributing to an industry that doesn't bring any new money into this country.
Another oppressive patriarchal measure to keep women in the home.
But, you know, now if you want to, and I have my husband's niece, you know, she's trying to get back into providing care in the caregiving field. She went to China and taught there. But in that year she was gone, her credentials lapsed. Well, now they want her to go back to school to take care of a bunch of two-year-olds babies.
Yeah.
And, you know, the real tragedy to this is that this girl is brilliant with children. She is a gift to children. She doesn't need education. That's something that comes from just the heart and the know-how. But we've created an industry to keep these universities in demand. When, you know, this is just a farce. You could put people into a, you know, if you want to have a life-saving course or a caregiver course, fine, go for a few nights. Just make sure you know what you're really in for, looking for kids. Do we really need university courses on how to care for toddlers?
Well, and we demand that everything be credentialed today in a way that, you know, this just goes back to our whole bureaucratic paperwork culture, which is really what's killing us, and just the regulations you have to go through. I mean, when I say I want people to start their own business, I would encourage them to do it off the books, because if you really do fill out all the forms and pay all the fines and the fees and so forth, it's, you know, entrepreneurship is punished by the people who don't have what it takes to be entrepreneurs.
Exactly.
That's why they work at the government.
Yeah.
They don't want to be able to, they don't want to take risks. So all these things feed into each other. And again, I would say that one of the big problems is that we complain and then we tell our kids, just go along with whatever the professor says. I know you have to take the stupid course about this and that, just nod your head, oh, tell you, Israel is bad, yes, what, just get your A and get out. And so, again, I blame all of us for saying, yes, I know, but.
Well, no,
yes,
don't
I know, but.
Don't put me in that. I always tell my kids to stand up and tell it like it is.
I think I'm able to bring all the subjects together for the evening now, everything from the slut walk to to academia. I think I can propose a new course for the third year feminism. It'll be ironic responses to neocolonial objectivization of women, and that would be a slut walk.
There you go.
There you go.
To get
and
that
they,
ironic responses
give,
to neocolonial.
I'm surprised they didn't give credit to the people for going on the slut walk.
They
would have been,
you know what?
10,000 people.
They probably should. I mean, this will be part of it now. This will be a field study.
Well, believe me, we're going to see this every year now.
I shouldn't be giving them ideas, but
no.
I think they can do this.
Only thing that we can be grateful for is that I call it never hear the end of it day, but Montreal Massacre Day is in December, so we can presume that there will be no mini-skirted slut walk on December 10th or 8th or whatever it is. I can never get it straight because it's just too darn cold, and this is Canada.
No.
But they'll probably have it. They'll move it to summer. You know, Gay Pride started out as a semi-spontaneous thing like this. So my prediction is that 10 years from now, there will be, you know, municipal funding for the annual slut walk, and it'll turn from slut walk day to slut walk week. And now, you know, it's Pride Month now. That's how old I am. I remember when it was a day. And now it's a month. And so my prediction is there's going to be, you know, slut walk funded by taxpayers now every year because everybody thought it was so fun and wonderful.
Well, maybe can we be on that organizing committee, Kathy?
There's one way to put a rosy glow on this. Well, actually, there'll probably be lots of rosy glows.
Are you still on that Hooter thing?
I do remember in Vancouver 15 or 20 years ago, a group of radical feminists wanted to protest the archaic decency laws and had a parade of topless. They were topless. They were wearing their jeans and they walked around topless to make a point. And, of course, this promoted tons of young men with cameras to come out and just start snapping away.
Oh, dare
and
they.
These women were aghast. This is not what... No, don't do that. Well, come on, you're walking and you're topless. We're going to take pictures.
Duh.
So they thought they were trying to make this statement, and they were trying to make the statement. And so they canceled it after a couple of years. It disappeared because the people just weren't getting it. So maybe if we could all go out and with our telephoto lenses and take extreme close-ups and everything like that of these so-called self-described sluts, they might sort of realize, and by the way, make sure that these get put up after these girls get married and have little kids and, you know, have perpetual websites that say, here are the sluts from 1999, here are the sluts That's from great. 2011, you know, it's 2025, and, oh, was your mother a slut in the slut walk? You know, this might kill it quicker than anything.
Well, we still have topless women during Pride. We're not supposed to call it gay Pride. I don't know why they took out the gay and left the Pride. I think it would have been more accurate to leave in the gay and take out the Pride. But there are always women who, during the lesbian walk on Sunday, because lesbians and gay men hate each other, that's something they don't want most people to know. So they won't parade with each other. And there are always, always, always topless women at the lesbian march, and every single one of them is the woman who should not be topless.
Right, right.
That's my objection to it. You know, I don't walk down the street, but a lot of these women should really have second thoughts about, it's just, why you and not you there with the shirt that's still on?
Right.
It's just bad decisions, well, people who don't have full-length mirrors or something.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the answer is, one other thing to sustain us.
They're back to that delusion thing again.
One other thing to sustain us in all of this is the great Rudyard Kipling poem, The Gods of the Copybook Headings. Are you familiar with that, Kathy?
Yes, and it's very similar to the idea that nature will out in the end.
That is correct. And that these copybook headings are expressions such as... a bird in hand is worth two in the bush. You fool me once or whatever. All these sorts of things.
Yeah.
All these tried and true expressions. And as Kipling saw it, these tried and true expressions were being buried and bowled over by the latest isms and fads of the day. Everything from capitalism and corporatism to environmentalism and feminism. And he wrote this almost a century ago. But he said that in the end, the gods of the copybook heading with terror and slaughter will return.
That's right.
So I'm always sustained by that thought.
Oh, I don't know if you know this story, but last year Glenn Beck put out a novel, and it had the theme. And so for the trailer for the book, he had someone read that last stanza of the poem. And hundreds of so-called intellectual liberals started making fun of him online, saying, can you believe it? On top of everything else, Glenn Beck is a lousy poet. What a stupid poem that was.
Oh,
and none
goodness.
Of them recognized the fact that it was, 100 years old. No, he hadn't written it. And actually, it wasn't lousy. It was good. And the guy won a Nobel Prize, and you didn't. So he had, as you can imagine, weeks and weeks of amusement.
No, I was not aware of that.
People who called him what a moron he was.
So when we get all the hate mail,
right.
Terry, we
well,
know
I've
what to say.
I've actually been using that last stanza in speeches for about a decade now, and I was inspired to do so by the great Ted Byfield, who has been using that in his speeches and some of his columns for three times as many decades, or four times as many. So it's one of the great poems. And so after you, all of our readers and listeners and viewers, go out and check out the 5 Feet of Fury website, Kathy Jayle.
With some discretion. Viewer discretion is sometimes advised
at
5 Feet
but
of Fury.
I want them to Google the gods of the copybook heading.
Well, yes.
And they also have to go to YouTube, or they have to click on the Dave Chappelle
video.
Wasn't that
video
wonderful?
That you have. Dave Chappelle talks about the women dressing up as sluts and makes a lovely metaphor and a good joke.
Oh, I laugh so hard, Kathy. Thank you for bringing that to my attention.
Well, you're welcome. And stand-up comedians, I post a lot of stand-up on my site because they are the court jesters who can say things that other people can't get away with. And he's one of them, and people won't talk about race, they won't talk about sex or violence or whatever, but they will do it on a stage, and somehow people will laugh and accept it better than they will from anybody else. So I like to put that up there to sort of cheer people up and let them know that other people are thinking this too.
Good stuff. And humor always works.
Right, that's true.
That's good. Thank you very much, Kathy
Shadle.
5 Feet of Fury. It's
so
great
fun.
And thanks for staying up late. I know you're back east, and we're just getting rolling here, but I do appreciate it.
Oh, well, thanks for asking me. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you very much.
Okay, we'll do this all again.
Bye-bye.
I hope so. Okay.
Have a good night, Kathy.
You too. Bye-bye.
Yeah, and again, we've had lots of emails so far. If you'd like to send us an email, do so at roadkillradio@live.ca.